This is the Betting on Zero podcast, inspired by the award-winning 2016 financial documentary Betting on Zero, with hosts Burke Kuntz and John Fichthol. All right, are we recording? I think we are recording. Here we are on the Betting on Zero podcast with John Fichthorn and Burke Kuntz.
How are we doing? Good morning.
Doing great. Doing all right.
Excellent.
Was that you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir. Happy New Year. Yeah. It's been a few weeks. And the good thing, you know, there's not a lot that's happened in the past several weeks we have to talk about. Yeah. I don't really know what we're going to talk about today.
It's been very quiet out there.
It's been quiet.
You know. The end of the Republic, you know, markets ripping, nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about. I don't know. I guess we can. Was that you I saw with like the buffalo horns on yesterday?
That was me.
I thought that was you.
Yeah. It was right after I went into Pelosi's office. I went down into the middle of the Senate and took over the dates with my buffalo horns. It was fantastic. I was almost out of fur skins before I went into D.C. last night to join the protest.
I sent you that Christmas present. I thought it might be useful. I thought, who in my life could use this pelt?
It went perfectly with the horns, by the way. It was a great look. I wasn't sure which face paint to go with. I was like American flag, yeah. Chinese flag. What do I paint my face with tonight? It was tough. So that was interesting. You know, it's one of those things where I'm listening to NPR this morning because I listen to NPR. You know, some people think I'm crazy libertarian. I'm not. I'm a balanced human. And they're like, last night, a violent mob took down Washington, D.C. and raided the Capitol building. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, there were some crazy people inside of the Capitol building. And I'm not okay with that. Like, I think there should be a firewall. Like, if I'm China, I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, it's that easy to get in? Just a couple of buffalo horns and I can run inside the Senate, break a window? Right. Like, I'm just shocked there weren't more dead people. But frankly, the coverage of a violent mob, which really was like 200,000 pretty peaceful people and about 200 crazy people. And then followed by their coverage of Kenosha, which is, you know, a peaceful protest took place last night, you know, and what we saw going on all summer. I think that's part of everyone's frustration, right? Mm-hmm. Where do I go to get actually an accurate, balanced reporting of reality? I don't know where to go anymore. Mm-hmm. Do I go to Fox? Does that give it to me? Do I go to NPR? Like, nobody, I feel like, what do you trust? Where do you go for news?
Yeah.
Like, I find more people are going to Zero Hedge or like, where do you go to find the truth?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, what's your answer?
I don't know. I mean, for me, it was Zero Hedge. And I think Zero Hedge is like gone, you know, too political for me anyway. I'm going there looking for like cool financial stories. And so I don't really know. I have started, I'll start with CNN, then they'll, you know, piss me off, and then I'll go to Fox and then they'll piss me off. And then I'll go to, like, I went to Patriot yesterday when I was driving the car, and like Hannity's on there blaming Antifa, which I think is completely bonkers. But that's the world we live in, but that's like this post-truth world where, I think in large part due to social media, like there's no Edward Murrow, there's no Walter Cronkite. And like, you know, there's a narrative for every crackpot out there. And that's so frustrating.
We all live in our own strange reality that we formed out of our social media feeds and out of our TV feeds and out of our whatever networks that we can now custom create for ourselves, and there's no shared truth. And I don't trust any of them at the end of the day. That's really, really the challenge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what an opportunity to create a new Edward Murrow, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's amazing. No one's done it yet, frankly.
Well, I mean, I think we can both agree that, I mean, maybe there was some media playing it up a little bit, maybe just the shots making the cross a bit. I mean, like, you don't get to walk into the Capitol, you know, while they're doing their jobs and, you know, and scratch yourself on Nancy Pelosi's chair. I mean, like, if there are laws, for protecting for terrorism, whatever. I mean, like, then if that doesn't get you arrested, then like, what gets you arrested?
Well, but at the same time, it's like, okay, we burned down tons of private property this summer and no one got arrested. Great.
I think now a lot of people got arrested, but
a lot of right. And I would imagine, and I would like to think that everybody who took a picture of themselves scratching themselves on Nancy Pelosi's chair and standing on the dais of the Senate, they get arrested. Like mm-hmm. all those people should get arrested, and we need to enforce the laws
right.
that exist, right? And yet I'm okay with a messy democracy. I think democracy is messy. The truth is messy.
Well, of course, right? it's messy.
And we should be okay with different opinions, and we should listen to them,
of
just
course.
Like we attempted to listen to the BLM protests. We should be listening to these protests,
right.
and we should be making the people that were protesting feel comfortable that the election was fair and honest.
Yeah, no, totally. But I mean, you know, you've got to get a permit, you know, to
right.
go protest in front of the Capitol. That's
right.
just part of the way a functioning society works. Like you don't get to put on your Buffalo Bill hat, you know, you know, and go parading into Congress. You know,
no.
that's just not how it works here. But
and that was astounding.
Yeah.
it really was. It was, and I think everyone was shocked and amazed except for the stock market. The stock market was
yeah.
like, all right, you know, we're taking 50 basis points off the queues and now we're going to buy the dip again.
Right.
Like,
that's right. Yeah.
I mean, I finally was like, oh my God, I better short stuff. This
yeah.
could be the end of the Republic. Right?
But I mean, you know, and we've talked about this before where, you know, on the night when Trump was elected, you know, futures were down, you know, in the thousands or, you know, the markets and you know, rational humans suddenly, you know, they got to work in the morning and thought, okay, what does this mean for, let's say, casinos? Is Donald Trump going to be bad for the gaming market? No. You know, is Donald Trump going to be bad for financials? No. I mean, and you go through the sectors, you go, you know what, I think this is actually going to be pretty good for markets. And so yesterday, you know, I woke up just like everybody else did going, oh my God, the Democrats have now both houses. What does this mean? Instinct is not good for prices, but you start doing your homework and you go, okay, well, let's see. Inflation is going to rise. Stimulus is going to happen. Net interest margin at banks is going to rise dramatically, potentially. You know, they're going to be able to earn money on their assets again. And you go through the sectors and you go, okay, well, it's at the end of the day, you know, it's a market of stocks. And
I got the same text as your brain and my brain from many of my group chats yesterday morning. Should I sell everything?
Right.
Like, is this it? Do I sell everything? And the response in the group chat was, I already have.
Right.
Yes, of course you should. To which, you know, I always end up in the same feedback loop to some extent that you did, which is, okay, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, well, the Democrats, like the Republicans, are going to spend a crap load of money.
Right.
In fact, arguably, it would almost be impossible for them to spend more money than Trump, given what is
right.
overall his
right.
spending inclinations and with the virus and everything else. But they're going to spend a lot of money, right? Maybe in a different way, but more money is going to come out. And so, mm-hmm. you know, historically, back in Bill Clinton's era, that would then lead to the interest rate, the bond vigilantes coming
yes.
in and laying down the law on budgets and saying, you can't spend more, you're spending too much, your debt to GDP is over 100, like this has got to end. But that entire control mechanism in our economy has been killed
right.
by the Fed, right? Because now there is no bond vigilante. The Fed comes in and they go,
they're all dead.
Things are bad. Just like the short sellers, bond vigilantes and short sellers are something that we now talk about in the past tense.
That's
not
right.
to say we won't be talking about them in the future again,
right?
Because all things must come to pass. But you know, in the present, they don't exist because the Fed comes in, and you know, our feedback loop is bad equals more Fed equals government can spend more equals market goes up on low interest rates and increased stimulus equals good equals Fed then tries to tighten equals things go back down. And that's our new cycle.
Yeah.
That's our new wash, rinse, repeat. Right. And that's why everybody buys the dip. That is the buy the dip.
Right.
The things bad, market goes down equals positive feedback loop
that's
again.
Right. That's right.
Right.
The worse it gets, the better the news is going to be.
And so the dips get shallower and shallower,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, we had 700 points when we didn't do, you know, the agreement in Congress mm-hmm. back in the day. And now we get, you know, 70 basis points when we storm the Capitol building
mm-hmm.
and sit down in the Senate so with mm-hmm. fur coats on. So, yeah, I don't know where that ends. I can tell you if you look through history, that continues to drive an asymptotic market until the world loses control of interest rates, which is why when I tell people, if you want to hedge yourself today, if I were to start a short fund for people to use as a hedge in this market, I would actually not short equities. Like, you actually want to be long financial assets, and those financial assets may be Bitcoin, they may be equities, they may be gold or oil. The hedge is when they lose control, right? I mean, whether it's the Weimar Republic in the 20s or whatever else, when it happens very quickly. And so I just think you got to stare at interest rates, right? Yeah. And we saw the 10-year breakout on an interest rate basis back to its kind of March high since March, which is still super low, right? Yay, our 10-year's yielding over 1%. 105. Hallelujah. Right, woohoo! And it's continuing to move today. But that's what you got to be focused on. Because if the Fed... or if the Bank of Japan, or if the Bank of China, or if the European banks lose control of that interest rate function, then they've lost control, right? Then we're not playing their game anymore. And that's when we have to start talking about soup and bullets and guns, or the great leap forward where we kind of all agree to wipe out all of our existing debt that our central banks own of our various government debts, and they do it all in a perfectly synchronized way, and poof, we're all good again.
Right,
which is kind of the great conspiracy theory that people talk about going forward. But in between that, we're all going to wipe out all our debts, and rates start to rise. Oh my God, what is about to happen now?
It's the debate that's been going on for 10 years. I mean, people have been worried about inflation, since for 10 years now, and it hasn't happened in large part because of the massive capacity of the global economy, to keep prices low, but at some point, it hasn't happened in our life. It has not happened in my investment lifetime. We haven't had inflation since I was a kid.
Inflation, and I use air quotes. Right, inflation is the most ridiculous measurement or ridiculously measured thing I can think of, right? Because I can barely afford to send my kid to private school, and I think I've done well, right? And, the thought of dealing with my parents and in-laws' healthcare costs as they get older, in conjunction with sending my kids to school, whether it's school or high school or college, is unimaginable. It's going to exceed my income in almost any possible imaginary scenario going forward, right? And and so you sit there and you're like, wow, there's a ton of inflation. That doesn't make sense.
Yes.
And in healthcare, education, and in financial assets. Right. And so, that is the basis for the distress across society, right? I can't get a regular, middle income job and pay and lead a good life where I'm not completely stressed about affording the basics, healthcare, education, right? I can't do it. And so to sit here and say there's no inflation like the Fed does is super frustrating. So what are we going to do? We're going to go zero interest rates, so people are forced down the risk curve into equity, so financial assets go up, so the people that don't need the money get richer, right, at the end of the day. Or at least that's kind of the loop that makes everybody angry. And I don't know. The solution to that is a lot of pain. Right. Yeah. It's ending this cycle that we talked about before, and no one's got the courage yesterday. To do that.
The fact that we've advocated critical thinking in this country to the point where people feel like they can, march into the Congress and wear funny outfits and have no ramifications. It kind of goes hand in hand with, a lot of people don't have the skills required. Most people don't have skills required to compete in a global economy because we haven't offered them to them, or they haven't taken them up for whatever reason. And these people feel like they've been screwed. And then somebody like Trump comes along and says, "Hey, you have been screwed, and we're going to help get you back on your feet, or we're going to tell you that anyway. You just send me a check, and I'll put it in my campaign fund." But it was hard not to be a little uncomfortable watching the market explode higher yesterday when we had people hanging off, the parapets at the Capitol building. And I think that is, that's a symptom of something gone wrong for a lot of people. You know, I mean,
it is there. And, you know, look, as I tried to explain to my daughter last night, who's, you know, very frustrated that where she is currently in school doesn't have an open dialogue politically, right? Mm-hmm. It is, you're either left or she's afraid she loses friends.
Our alma mater, Deerfield Academy.
And so I wasn't going to bury it like that, right?
It's totally.
And so
we're not going to get into censorship here.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, I said, look, Daisy, you know, I'm about free markets, and free markets are free speech, and free markets are about prices not being manipulated, because prices carry information and people need to be able to trust the prices as reflecting the reality they see, just like the speech. And once again, we started this conversation with, there isn't free speech in the media. You know, you can't find truth, and you can't find truth in the markets, because prices also are manipulated, because the base setting price of risk-free rate is being manipulated. Mm-hmm. And that forces every price to have a response function to it, because that is the base financing cost for mm-hmm. everything. So mm-hmm. there is no free speech. And so, you know, I just keep struggling with, how do you get back to this free market? And so I was reading von Mises last night, because I said mm-hmm. to her, I was like, look, I'm a libertarian. You know what you should start at Deerfield? Don't go to the Republican Club. Don't go to the Democrat Club. Go start the Libertarian Club and mm-hmm. figure out what that is and have this conversation. So I was kind of giving her books. Read Road to Serfdom, right? Mm-hmm. Read it. Stop letting it sit on your desk. If you haven't read Friedrich von Hayek's Road to Serfdom, or Friedrich Hayek's Road to Serfdom, mm-hmm. it's my favorite book. Sure. And so then I was reading some von Mises, which is it's like anti-capitalism or something mm-hmm. was the title of the book. And he was talking about how America, and this is like, you know, an 80-year-old book, is mm-hmm. different than Europe. And how in Europe, they had the salons. And society in Europe is very different than society in America. Mm-hmm. Society in Europe was kind of the elites from all industries, mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. arts and literature and finance and industry, all getting together and meeting together on a regular basis and sharing ideas across those industries. Society in America, mm-hmm. apparently 80 years ago, was exactly the same as it is today. Mm-hmm. Useless kind of socialites with too much money who don't share across right. industries and don't communicate right. across.
They're not interested. They just want to show that they belong.
Right. And so
like
I was like, we should really start the salon back. Right. Uh-huh. I was like, you know what? That'd be really interesting, is to start a group that really tried to embrace across industry yeah. conversations and dialogues, because it really doesn't exist in America. And I didn't right. really realize there was that distinction between America and Europe. But whatever we can do to encourage free speech and free markets, I think is something that lets people vent.
Yeah.
Right. It'll let those protests vent, whether it's BLM or whether it's sitting outside of Congress yesterday. That's the same frustration.
Yeah.
It is, I don't feel like my speech is being heard. I right. don't feel like I have an outlet. I right. don't feel like people are listening, and I don't feel like I can hear my voice coming back to me over the radio or the television or whatever else.
Right. Right. Right? And you know, and the fact that there's no go-to set of agreed upon facts is, you know, how people can feel like they're just directed down the street and they feel like they can march right in because, well, I guess in fairness to them, the president told them that they should go do it.
And I would take it. So everybody but there's a little bit of a distinction here. I'm okay with there being no agreed upon facts to the extent that I'm having an open, constructive, civil discourse, where his facts and my facts, using air quotes about the word facts there, are confronting each other, right? Mm. That is the Hegelian dialectic. I have a thesis, I have an antithesis, and I get a synthesis, and that is my new truth that forms the basis for my new thesis, and that is my stairway to truth.
Right.
The problem is, one media group doesn't show this.
They don't recognize the other group. Exactly.
I have two echo chambers, mm-hmm. neither of them communicate, and I'm never able to get to that stair step to the next level of truth. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck at this level where he's saying one thing, I'm saying the other thing, and we're not willing to confront each other and listen to each other.
Right.
I don't know what the answer is, but that, I think that's the problem. Not that there isn't agreed upon truth, but there isn't even an open forum for us to disagree out loud.
Right. Well, you're talking about, what you're saying, what you're calling the dialectic method, what I'm calling critical thinking. I mean, they were talking about the same thing where, I mean, there's no effort to do this. And in large part, I guess, just because paid media model, it doesn't pay, you know, to seek agreement. It pays to see this, to sow the seeds of discord. And,
right.
and that's a problem.
You know, even inside of Maven, where I'm executive chairman, full disclosure, and the business was started to create this platform to bring the opposing sides together to have this discord in a constructive way, or at least on a single platform, proved incredibly difficult, right? Mm-hmm. The two sides were so opposed to each other, they were even opposed to being on the same technology platform.
Right.
Like, what if we offend advertisers over here? Well, what if we offend advertisers over there? It is no small feat in this economy to even try and represent that you're for both sides, or at mm-hmm. least for both sides having right. a conversation, right?
Right.
So I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah.
That's our goal of this podcast.
Yeah.
Fix that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it might take more than six episodes so far. So there was some news about Herbalife, our old friends at Herbalife, this past week. What was it?
Well, so, you know, finally, Uncle Carl gives in, mm-hmm. sells mm-hmm. his whole stake in such, I mean, this guy, like, you know, you say what you want. But that is some just grade A execution. You know, it's funny because ironically, I spoke to a former icon executive mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, raising money for a different venture. Happened to come across the guy mm-hmm. totally by random. And I mentioned I'd done betting on zero. I'd looked up his background as well. And he was like, yeah, I was at Icon for all of that. He's like, I stayed out of it. You guys were right.
Right.
which was really fascinating.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And I know. And like 3 days later, this is on the tape. And I'm right. like, you know what?
Great. So talking about it.
They knew it, right? We knew Carl didn't really believe this.
The shares, or what was it? He sold right. all the shares?
He sold all of his stock, basically yeah. back to the company's buyback.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't even have to puke it into the market.
Right.
He had control of the board, and he's like, hey, board, I have an idea. Why don't you do a share buyback? I know whose shares you could buy. Mine. I quit. Yay.
Goodbye, resign everybody.
From the board. Perfect. All right. It's like, holy crap, that happened so fast.
Yeah.
Like,
and then he says, the quote in the paper was, you know, like Icon's got a rule. He says, when you make $1.5 billion on something, you sell a little bit.
Right. Or all of it. And then resign right. from the board and run away and go,
I win.
Right. Yeah. Frankly, what I find even more shocking is that after pulling the great, like, super Lindy triple backflip with mm-hmm. a flawless 10 rating on execution, the stock went up. Like,
right.
You're like, yeah. huh? I mean, this is a company that trades at, you know, their revenues, EBITDA, cash flow are all flat to down since 2013, mm-hmm. right? So I got 8 years of nothing. It trades at like 12 to 14 times EBITDA, at least on my Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. It now has $2.5 billion of debt that it didn't have before.
Right. that's where Icon stock was.
Right.
In the capital structure.
Exactly. I know. Let's lever up and buy me out so I can quit. Right. And so like, that's just, you know, it's not always about whether you're right.
No, that's the whole point. I mean, it's like, I mean, there was an argument, and then there was an ability for either side to exploit a feature in the company. And the feature, from my perspective, was this is a fraudulent business model. And the feature from Icon's perspective was there's a short seller that's hugely exposed. And both
with a business that generates cash flow. And I'm not even going to question how.
Right.
It just does. Right.
Right. Right. And no one has told me yet that it's illegal. And so, and I know that they got enough cash flow so they can, you know, pay off a couple of converts that they're going to, you know, use.
And we can lever this sucker up and we can, you know, recap me out of here.
Right.
Look at me. Right.
Right. Right.
Well done.
Yeah.
So that was painful to watch, I got to say. And yet something that you should take note of, right? Like,
right.
Okay. It's why, in some ways, I love the markets. If you're not humble as an investor,
yeah.
then you just haven't been doing it long enough.
Right.
Right? Because there will never be a market that doesn't astound you in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, look, you know, back to just looking at yesterday. I mean, you're like, oh, my God, this is a disaster. It's like, oh, Russell's up 4.5%.
Right. And arguably, you know, one of the things that came out of the Trump election day, as I sat there that morning with Trump's election going, what are the outputs of this, right? I was like, okay, things that are good, for-profit ed, MLMs, right? Mm-hmm. Trump loves both those things,
right. Look for the bond villain industries and go long.
Right. And it actually worked. Right. And so now I go, all right, now I got a bunch of Democrats controlling Congress. Like the Democrats did a good job of actually putting the reins on the for-profit ed industry that really was robbing a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And they tried to do the same thing a little bit, with the exception of Kamala Harris, who refused to touch Herbalife in California.
Right.
You know, I think generally the Democrats are anti-MLM and anti-for-profit ed. And yet here Herbalife's gone up, you know, 10% post Uncle Carl's sale to them subsequent to that. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting, I look at all the industries now that it's a blue wave. I fear of my energy call, and yet oil, I still think oil is going to really shock everybody by continuing to rise. Oil finally, West Texas broke 50 yesterday, and here, where are we today? It's almost 51, right? Like, I continue to sit here and go, all right, they're not going to end fracking. Mm-hmm. They might end it on federal lands, which, fine, God bless. That's just going to eliminate some supply. But the reality is the fracking industry gives us a lot of peace and security globally and saves a lot of our soldiers' lives from going abroad, which I would like to think when people get down to having that conversation, they agree with. And so, you know, we've taken 20% off of global oil supply, my estimate, by the way. And I think we're going to be back to peak oil. We're only 10% off demand today, at least the chart I was looking at yesterday. And I think we're going to exceed 100% of where we were in February. Once everybody can travel again, it's going to be like, oh my God, time to see grandma. I can't wait. Like, think of all the pent up demand there is out there. Oh, yeah. And when we're at 110% of February's demand, and we're still at 85% of February's supply, that's going to equal $100 oil, in my opinion, no matter what the Saudis, the Iranians, once again, my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. Do not take this as investment advice.
Right.
But, you know, I continue to look at my energy stocks and think that they're the cheapest, they're the last cheap things left in the space, frankly.
Right.
And I don't think the Democrats are going to kill it.
Right. And what about financials? I mean, you know, I think for a while there, the narrative was, oh my God, they're going to install Elizabeth Warren as, you know, head of something, you know, was going to be Treasury or whatnot. Of course, that was stupid because that would mean they'd pull her out of the Senate where they, you know, lose control. But you know, so far, what the appointments we've seen are, you know, pretty moderate. And you're going to see, you know, net interest margin expand dramatically if the trajectory of these rates hold. So, like, do you think this is positive for financials, or what do you
look?
You
know? It's just, it's an interest rate curve thing again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you just end up going, what are rates doing? And yeah, I don't think they're going to, at this point, at the end of the day, Democrats like consolidation of power, right? It's kind of your next step towards. So I don't think they're going to break up JP Morgan and try and get us back into a 10,000 regional bank system.
No.
And so, yeah, you know, you kind of go, all right, well, it's good for energy. It's currently good for financials, right? At least if I'm looking at interest rates. Mm-hmm. And yet I go, interest rates going up, that might be bad for my really expensive tech sector.
Well, right. You know, that's the thing. It's not, I had a lot of calls yesterday and people asking, well, what do we do with technology? Or does this mean, you know, why is it lagging? Are they going to break up big tech? Is that bad? And I think, you know, I agree that, well, at least my view, that it's more of a math thing. You know, you've got a long duration asset, you know, where you have, you know, these high PE stocks and with no expectation of a cash flow for many years. And the math on that, is yields an unfortunate result for, you know, a lot of tech names that have had great runs.
Higher interest rates are bad for the Qs, generally speaking, right? Some of them, Google generates a lot of cash, but yet you also have this kind of anti-big tech sentiment that's real, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I shorted some Alibaba about a week ago, because I see, I'm sorry, Jack Ma's missing and one of your most valuable.
Like, do you know something we don't know about the location of Jack Ma?
You know, it's really, really fascinating. China is one of my biggest question marks, right? And I just don't know, is like what happened during Trump was not just Trump.
Sure.
The anti-China sentiment, the China has been playing us as fools, spread from initially just Peter Navarro and Trump globally. And I talked to some people who were very deep in the government who said, this is not a Trump administration thing. This is now a Japan thing. This is a European thing. Well, although the Europeans just signed a freaking agreement with China, but at the very least, it is Japan, England, like the Five Eyes are all in alignment of Xi Jinping is not one of us anymore. And which is unfortunate and something I wish would change, but currently it hasn't. And so I kind of wonder, is Biden going to come in and keep doing that? And I look at this crazy back and forth with the New York Stock Exchange and the China telecom.
Oh my God. Stocks.
We're going to delist them. We're not going to delist them. We're going to delist them after all. Right. Like, you know, we're now sitting here looking at a situation where we may require the Chinese companies, as we discussed in a previous podcast, to actually live up to our market rules. Like, what an amazing thing that would be. You actually have to have a real auditor.
Right.
Okay, that's interesting.
Right.
And now not only like, so how that's going to play out, like that could be a huge trade going forward. Like, is China tech something that is now, or is Biden on the take? And he's going to do what he's been paid to do and somehow make this all disappear under the guise of we're going to normalize our relationship with China. I don't know. Right. Yeah. But I do know that China is not really psyched about Jack Ma and right. Ant. And I don't like, there's a lot of question marks. You read Alibaba's 20F, all 300 godly pages of it.
Right. Well, that's what I got you for.
There's just an incredible amount of question marks in that thing.
Right.
And by question marks, I mean things where you go, that makes no sense. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't pay for that.
Yeah.
And
well, you've been a China bear for some time. And I've been highly skeptical as well. I've written about it in the past. But like you and I see Navarro through a different lens. We've known who Navarro was for years. And, you know, he's written credibly on, you know, issues like red capitalism and stuff like that. You know, I think that I'm not sure if I know why he weighs in on, you know, matters of public health and like, you know, election fraud, unless he's learned about those things in the studies of China. But you know, he was out yesterday with, you know, and his volume two of, you know, how the Democrats won, and you read it and it's, you know, I mean, it's basically just regurgitation of it's George Soros, it's Mark Zuckerberg. And it was actually kind of funny. You know, it's like key methods used by the Democratic Party to strategically game. I'm reading now from his executive summary in Art of the Steal. to surgically game America's presidential election included changes in the law approved by legislatures, court rulings and interventions, relaxing mail-in and absentee ballot rules. And the thing that he's not saying is like, well, all this is that's sort of what campaigns get paid to do. I mean, like he's not coming out and saying they did anything illegal. He's just saying this is what happened and this is why,
you know, Trump lost. I got to say this. I think there was there were election irregularities. And
well, sure.
I do think it should be vetted. And yet at the same time, I'm like, look, it went through the process.
Right.
A, they changed the rules for what I'm going to have to say was kind of a good reason. There was a global pandemic.
Well, that's the thing. And he says, you'll like this. Where is it? I think it's page two. Democrat Party operatives frequently hid behind the shield of the Chinese Communist Party virus, the CCP virus, and resultant pandemic to further their goals of boosting the absentee and mail-in ballot counts in the key battleground states. Key political operatives assisting the Democrat Party included Wall Street oligarch George Soros, Silicon Valley oligarch Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, and blah, 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 blah. And you know,
who are they going to blame when Soros kicks the bucket? That's going to be a real
could be you. Could be, I mean, who knows?
But I wish. Yeah, right. Maybe if I have that'd be awesome.
Right.
I'm going to use all $20 billion that I don't have to.
Right.
Influence the world. But no, like, I think, you know, all of those, they passed laws, whether they're constitutional or not, debatable, but like we should have protested those prior to the election, right? Which was really the Pennsylvania courts dispute with the whole thing. Like, like you knew this was happening. Why did you just make noise
about
it when
until you lost? Right.
Right. Like, so, you know, I do think that they should make it a point to make the laws much tighter, clearer, and non-COVID related. There are a lot of legitimate complaints here, but the fact of the matter is Trump filed a couple hundred lawsuits and all of them got shot down. Right. So you got to believe that the entire judicial system is also like on the take with George Soros.
Right.
And and so he went like he went through the process.
Right.
And yet America is still unsatisfied with the outcome, which is okay. And I would agree there are questions, but like you got to believe the whole system is broken.
Right.
And to believe that this was fraudulent.
Right.
And
it seems unlikely that so now they're saying, well, it's not that they didn't have evidence, that they didn't have standing. It's like you would think that there'd be one lawyer in America that could figure out a way to file a complaint to get the evidence into a courtroom and have it examined. But apparently that, Navarro and others have issued these reports. Just one.
our last podcast, Texas was going to file, Supreme Court was going to hear it. It was going to be the big day.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Okay. Well, you kind of got it to the top of the pyramid. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Right. Oh, well.
At the end of the day, they played the game that much better, which in our society is like, you won.
Right.
Great.
Right.
We'll see you in 2 years.
Right. Right. Well, and it's not like he wasn't trailing in all of the polls all of the time. I mean, it's not like he went from, wow, he was leading in all the polls and he somehow lost. Man, whoa, that smells weird. It's like, no, dude, he was the underdog from the get-go.
And I looked at that, watching the election that night, and I was up at 11:59, and Navarro likes to go, here's where he was at midnight, here where he was was the next morning. And I looked at it at 11:59, and I went, oh, we are screwed. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to lose. All these mail-in, ballots are just about to hit.
Right.
And he's definitely going to lose that on a percentage basis, and the percentage basis times the number of mail-in ballots equals he's going to lose that state.
Right.
And I went to bed going, he's going to lose the election. Mm-hmm. So for me, it wasn't. So I'm kind of like, and by the way, how did we gain seats in Congress and not get wiped out in the Senate? Like, did the guys committing the fraud, they only voted for president?
Right. Exactly. They only flipped that one. Their algorithms are so advanced at Dominion that they can erase the bubble at the top and move that one over.
Seems like it's a pretty crappy algorithm. It could use some improvement, frankly, if that's what's committing fraud. I think it should all be vetted because I think it's important to people to have this conversation and to be able to fight out loud. And, but still, I just can't quite buy it. I want to, I just can't.
Right.
I just can't quite.
Right. Right. And look, everybody's had every right to take this to every court in America, but, and they did. And that's fine. But I keep coming. There was a photograph taken of Trump and Coney Barrett, the new justice. Is it Coney Barrett or Coney Barrett?
Yes.
Yeah. So there was this photograph taken the night when she was sworn in, and they're I think they're standing on some balcony in the White House, and he's got his arm basically around her, and like he looks like the dog that has just caught the bus. I mean, like, he's so convinced. That like he has just sealed it. He's like, now I got him. I got my justices and I'm going to win. And like, he actually thought that they would, be in it for him. And it's unfortunate that, I don't know. I guess.
And look, he got the justices and still lost. Right. I take a lot of confidence in the system in that, the system hasn't been run by one side for 4 years that then reinforced that side. It's been run by one side for 4 years that then went with the other side at the end of the day. Like that gives me confidence as a citizen.
Totally.
Even though I had to put on my fur coat and horns last night and run down to D.C.
Right,
and,
right.
I've always wanted to sit in the Senate with my horns on.
Exactly. And also it's important to, I think, for perspective here. It's like we're talking about, yes, the Democrats have the majority now, by one. I mean, this is not a mandate.
By zero.
Right.
By an emergency vote, right?
That's
by a tiebreaker.
Right.
Which, It'll be an interesting couple of years, and we'll see what comes out the other side. I hope it's interesting in a good way and not interesting in a crappy way, right? Because the real question is, you know, if I had to make my call on what are the swans you should be looking out for, A, I think interest rates are a huge swan. Mm-hmm. I think oil doing something really weird is a huge swan. Mm-hmm. I think China invading Taiwan is probably the biggest.
Right. So that's the thing. It's swan. Likely to come from somewhere beyond our borders where, you know, where something will upset the apple cart and the, you know, the misallocations of capital that exists in our system, particularly here, you know, will have to be rebalanced, you know, and that's going to cause some volatility.
China's going to, like, we've been conducting a very strong Chinese policy, right? We're floating ships into the South China Sea. We're making rules, you know, against China because of Hong Kong. And now we have a new administration in. What's going to happen if I'm China and I'm already conducting war games over the Taiwan Strait? Like, okay, what happens when they march in? So I said to somebody like, China invading Taiwan. That's my 2021 lookout scenario.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then he's like, well, what happens? And I said, well, they invade Taiwan and I don't know. I guess we go congratulations and send him a housewarming gift because that's naughty, what we did kind of with Hong Kong. We're like,
right. We will not stand for that unless it's expensive.
Don't do that. Or we're going to tell you not to do it again.
Right. Exactly.
Just like we did with Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's my black swan that probably ends up being a 14 basis point dip that you're supposed to buy.
Right. Why it's bullish. You know, consolidate the semiconductor sector under communism.
Yes, yes. Look, China just acquired TSMC for free.
Look at the multiples out there. It's like, that's right. Maybe they should buy Intel. They should invade Nevada.
So yeah, I'll keep working on my plan. I'll stick with interest rates because maybe I don't know. It's sad, funny, and who knows?
Yeah.
But there we go.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got anything else for the day?
I don't think so. I think we've talked ourselves at least me now. Have you talked yourself into a calmer state or a more agitated state? I think I'm a little bit calmer now, but I haven't looked.
Yeah, it was good to vent. It was a good event. And, you know, feel free to send any commentary. Oh, we should give our disclaimer. You should give your disclaimer.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. I almost forgot.
First of all, anything I say, you should not take as investment advice. I'm not a registered investment advisor. I don't really work for anybody at this point, except for being on some boards. And so hopefully you don't take anything I said as actual real advice. This is just for entertainment purposes only.
Yes. And any opinions, except for those of John, are those of Berggruen's and are not necessarily those of Raymond James. There's no guarantee that these statements, opinions, or forecasts provided herein will prove to be correct. In fact, they probably won't. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Berggruen is a financial advisor at Raymond James & Associates, member New York Stock Exchange, member SIPC. So,
excellent. Well done. You've nailed that.
Oh, yeah.
Super. All right. Well, you have a great Thursday and Friday and weekend, and let's try and get on a regular weekly schedule so we can build our listeners up to 150.
Or somewhere. 150,000, you mean.
1,000. That's what I meant. I just rounding down.
So soon, hopefully we'll get Ted, our director, on here pretty soon and a few other folks from the film.
Yeah, we should have a pretty good guest lineup for 2021. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it should be good. So I talked to Ted this week. He wants to do it soon, and we'll get some of the other folks on there too. So good stuff. Cool. Well, good seeing you.
And all right, good to see you. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Thank you for listening to the Betting on Zero podcast. These opinions are intended as entertainment. Any opinions expressed on this podcast by Bert Koontz, John Pickmore, or anyone else are not necessarily Mr. Raymond James. There is no guarantee that the statements, opinions, or forecasts provided herein will prove to be correct. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision does not constitute a recommendation. Berggruen is a financial advisor, Raymond James Associates, Incorporated, member of New York Stock Exchange, member SIPC.